welcome to the Becoming Superhuman podcast. My name is Dr. Nirvani Umadat. I've spent years working as a dentist and researcher. I've traveled all over the world, and I've built a business that has allowed me to help thousands of people. I've studied conventional, ancient, and spiritual sciences. And through these studies, I've realized merging science with spirituality is necessary for us to understand who we are. I'm here to help you up-level your life, mind, body, soul, and become your own version of superhuman. Today, I am excited to welcome Juanita McDonald to the podcast. She is a woman I am not only blessed to be able to call a dear friend, but she is also such a shining example of what it means to age with vitality and intentionality. She has spent the last 15 years working with people all over and sharing with them what she calls the seven laws of existence to help them create the most beautiful lives they can imagine for themselves. In this podcast, we discuss aging with vibrancy, vitality, intention, and taking self-responsibility for our experience here on Earth. I'm excited for you to hear this conversation and see what a beautiful example Juanita is for all of us, because aging with beauty, vitality, and excitement is an integral part of becoming superhuman. So today I want to welcome and honor my guest, Juanita McDonald, to speak with me today about longevity and vitality and your experience cultivating a life that is so rich and full of both of those things. And what I'd like to give you the opportunity to do before we dive too deeply into what you do on a day-to-day basis is for you to maybe just give us a little bit of a history on what your life has looked like over all of these years and how you developed and maintained an attitude of the idea that life and your life in particular was meant to get better with time versus what we collectively tend to believe, which is as we age, we are supposed to get sick and break down and become frail. So how have you been able to develop a life that really opposes that?
Hi, thank you. I'd love to answer that question, actually. I was one of the very lucky people who was born into a family of very healthy older people. I use my bragging rights about my dad, who lived to be 93 in his own home, never on medications, just no different than you and I, even at 93. He just went to bed one day, and he died, and that was it. And he had two older brothers as well. His next older brother was 96, his other brother was 103, and his sister was 98. And they just did exactly what we were doing. They just lived their best lives. They didn't act old. They didn't think old. And so I was given that example. And so it never occurred to me that old age equals sickness, which I think is really promoted now. So when I look at my dad and his family, it's clear to me that growing old doesn't equal becoming sick, Dr. Nirvani.
Okay. And I just want to actually share a quote here as we're recording this that you shared with me. And it's from an author that you've been reading lately. His name is Herbert Shelton. And the quote is, "Old age is not a time of life. It is a condition of the body. It is not time that ages the body. It's abuse that does so." And you shared that quote with me, Juanita. I told you that it was really resonant for me, which I meant and I still believe. But from your perspective, when he says abuse ages the body and not time, how do you interpret that? Or what does that mean to you as somebody who is it okay if I share your age?
Sure.
66 years old?
In October.
In October. Okay. So as somebody who is 66 years old, doesn't look it, doesn't act it, but lives a very full life, what does that quote mean to you?
Mm-hmm. That quote meant a lot to me as well, just resonated deeply with me, because I believe that mind, body, and soul are all connected in how we live our life, whether it's aging, doesn't matter what it is. And so for myself personally, for many years, and even as a younger person, I watch what I put into my body. As an example, again, as you said, I'll be 66 just shortly, and I've never been on medications. I've taken antibiotics twice in my entire life. So once as a teenager and once as an older person. So I take care of myself. I believe that we're responsible for our well-being and for our health. So first of all, you need to feel and think healthy. So just to know that what we said when you first, the first thing that we talked about, that growing old doesn't equal being sick. And so the things that you do all along are going to predispose you one way or another. So for me, I'm very holistic. I believe that the body is able to heal itself of most things. And I'm very mindful of what I eat. I'm very mindful of what I listen to. I choose my music. I do not watch TV. I love to be outside. I garden. And these are things that I've done all along. So this isn't anything new. I would say back in my 20s, I was newly married and had young children. And I realized that I didn't even want to do my chores in the home or look after my children because I was watching soap operas. So as a very young person, I just decided, nope, I'm done. I'm not going to watch TV. And I've carried that forward my entire life. And at this point in what I'm experiencing, as far as what I call social engineering, as an example, I haven't had a lot of programming because I am very intentional of everything that I do to my body, whether it's listening to music, whether it's watching a movie, what food I put into my body. I love to walk. I love to do yoga. I can still do a handstand. I do headstands. And I don't, as a rule, use age as a reason not to be able to do things. I love to dress up. I've got really long hair for my age. I usually don't even consider age in the decisions that I make about my life, other than the fact that I do like to, and that it isn't because of age, I just do like to do things that I research and feel are healthy, again, for how I think, how I feel, the things that I put into my body. So does that answer that question?
Yeah. So you mentioned that you believe that you have spent your life actually not being programmed by what you referred to as social architects or social engineers. So having said that, what did you program yourself with? What were you using to build your ideas and build the paradigms that you've chose to live within?
I started at quite an early age, I'm going to say in my late 20s, to read. First of all, I started with self-help books, which was great. I learned a lot of information. And then in my later 30s, I owned a health food store. And that was very eye-opening for me, it was the first time that I realized that what we call the healthcare system and the alternative systems were actually at odds with each other. I didn't know that prior to opening a health food store. So having that store, and I just am an avid reader, and I went through a period in my late 30s, early 40s, where I would say I sort of hit a brick wall. My mother died of cancer, and I just had a lot of things happen that really threw me off and made me dig deeply into myself to stay with the core beliefs that I had, such as that old age doesn't equal sickness, etc. And what I found was that as I explored ideas or books or systems, tried them on myself, checked my own experience, each time I came up with something that I really loved, something else came to me. So it was almost like as I had a thirst for knowledge, for health, for happiness, really. I would say started some of these things because I looked around and I saw that people didn't seem to be overly happy, including myself. And I thought, okay, there has to be a way to feel happy. And again, reading, studying, I took courses. I had a tremendous thirst to feel good, to not be sick, and even to be able to share that with others and to mentor younger people as well. So I've spent years at this point, I would say the last 25 to 30 years, really on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, either attending a retreat, taking a course, a seminar, reading a book. And I have had great mentors and teachers over the years, and got to a place where I myself teach meditation and work with people doing that as well. And I feel, as I've said to you before, that one of the most important things that I'd like to leave when I leave the earth plane is for the people who are in my circle, whatever that means, whether they're my beautiful inner circle or at large, that, you know, growing older is just a beautiful part of being on earth. And you should still be beautiful and intelligent and happy and loving and sexy if you want to be, or whatever it is that you want. And I want to be able to live that and show that to the younger people, so that, as what I said before, the what I call the social engineers, you know, that are showing people who are not well and not living like that, that the people in my circle can look at me and say, "Oh yeah, no, that's nonsense. Juanita, you know, she still runs and she's 85 years old, right? She still has the highest heels of anybody I know." So in a sense, that's keeps me going. And it's also fun too. It's fun too. I have this little place that I go to where I go dancing and literally go in there and get asked to dance all night. And again, I'm, you know, well into my 60s, and it's just fun. I think that the studies, the attitude, the meditation, feeding your body things that help it to feel good as well, you know, health-wise, just allows you to be very vibrant and happy. And so anyway, that's just kind of what I'm hoping to continue to do.
And you mentioned that you work with others as a teacher and as a coach. And in all of the studies and the work that you have done with others and things that you've taken with others, I know over the years you have integrated all of those things, and you probably have principles that you live by that are your own and that you share with those that you work with. Do you want to share some of those key tenets that you have amalgamated for yourself in what it means to live a really vital, beautiful life?
I have a foundation that pretty much anything that I learn new, because I think you just need to be open, and that on earth, we're always going to learn, and that never stops. So the journey of being in a body, I believe, is just a learning experience. And I have a foundation, which is what I go over with people that I work with, and it's what I use myself, the fact that we are made of energy, we're energetic beings, and the fact that every experience that we have is sort of from the inside out, and it's always in the present moment. So that energy that we're made of, and we're all made of the energy, it isn't different for anybody. Every one of us are made of energy. And it's kind of cool, because when we realize that we're all made of the same energy, it also levels the playing field a bit as well. And I really love that part of it. And so the energy itself that has a nature, and the nature of the energy, it's no wonder that we want to be happy, because the energy itself is made of expansion and light and harmony. So we're predisposed or pre-wired to be happy, to be healthy, to be vibrant. And so the other part of the foundation work that I always look at and run by myself is that the thinking is what moves the energy around. So the experiences that we're having, as an example, even right now, you could just take a moment and say, okay, I feel really grateful. I feel really grateful. So just try it, Dr. Nirvani. Think of something that you're extremely grateful for. And notice that as you place the energy in the thinking into the energy, and you bring something to mind that you're really grateful for, your body, all of a sudden, that energy starts to pick up on that. And you begin to experience that frequency of feeling grateful. And so in my daily life, those are the things that I look at. I look at noticing if I feel out of sorts, I'll just notice, oh, okay, let me just refocus here. And it's not a Pollyanna kind of only thinking of good things, but I do believe that we have the ability and the opportunity to a degree to choose how our energy experiences our human experience, as an example. So when I wake up and it's a beautiful sunny day, and I just say, oh, I'm just so happy to be here, you know, for another day. It's a beautiful sunny day. What am I going to do today? You know, what is this day going to look like? And I just, on the whole, live my life that way. I know that we're made of energy. I know that everything is present. I know that we're in at some level, either consciously or unconsciously, moving that energy around. And I do as much as possible, notice what I'm experiencing and know that I have a large say in that.
Yeah. And what you're speaking to is, I think now is even, you know, much more broadly accepted within even conventional science, but what would possibly be considered unconventional or slightly alternative quantum sciences, that mm-hmm. idea that we are energetic beings and that the energy that we cultivate and host within our own physical and metaphysical fields actually interacts with the universal energy around us is a baseline theory for the field of quantum physics. So even in conventional science, where everything needs to be data-driven and data-based, the reason that double-blind studies were even introduced and were considered some kind of a gold standard is because conventional scientists recognized that when an observer or when somebody is consciously placing their attention on an experiment, it actually influences the outcome of the experiment. So the observer or the scientist or the experimenter can have an influence on how that experiment plays out based on their awareness of what's happening and their intention in observing it and their attention to observing it. So the reason I bring that up is that although the idea that we're energetic light beings might sound somewhat woo to some people, the principle that we influence our surroundings and that the energy and the attention that we place on things directly affects the outcome of our experiences, that isn't a new idea, and that isn't a woo-woo idea at all. We basically take that understanding, and although it's perhaps presented in a different way in schools and in, you know, conventional Western education, we understand, to whatever degree we do, that there's a truth to that, that when we put energy into something, it influences the outcome of that thing. So I just want to kind of draw that parallel for anyone who maybe has never necessarily heard that idea or would have some difficulty understanding or digesting the validity of it. It's absolutely true. That's how we operate our current paradigms of science. And, you know, which is really exciting for me, the more expansive paradigms that are now really flourishing, and we have a lot of interest and focus in the quantum sciences, those ideas aren't new, and they're not novel, and they're not baseless. They're totally valid. So thank you for sharing that. Those are some things that you're implementing into your life and that you use to kind of do life on a day-to-day basis.
And I can see from my experience, again, I've been here for quite a while on Earth, and I can see from a young person how I thought and how, you know, a little more back in my early 20s and 30s, a little more victim-minded, so to speak, although I've not really ever been victim-minded, but just slightly, compared to feeling the power of knowing that I do have some say in how my life is unfolding. One example is, I remember, as I said earlier, my mother died of cancer. And I had this thought when that happened, oh goodness, everybody dies of cancer. And then I realized, whoa, just a minute here, stop. Because again, what I've learned, and even through my own experience, is in a sense, it's an old cliche that I've heard of many times, but what you focus on expands, or what you think about, you bring about. And that came to mind as well. I thought, whoa, I'm definitely not going to have that thought running through my mind. And now that I've, again, I've opened the health food store, and I've also done many, many studies, whether it be on food, whether it be on meditation, whether it be on the quantum physics, like you were speaking of. And I just fully believe that we have so much more say in how our life unfolds. And I've experienced that. I've literally can look back and see how I was, where my life was going in the direction and the pivot that I made to where I am now, and really just healthy, happy, vibrant, look forward to life, and not really concerned as time goes by.
And I would like to just honor you, Juanita, because when I know you personally very closely, and when I think of you, I think of a self-experimenter. And I think that that's something that you know, you've been doing this vitality thing for a very long time, for many years. And I think it's just something you now embody. But your level of openness and allowing, as far as being able to take in information and see if maybe implementing some or all or none of it would be a good fit for you, I think is just something that you do naturally. And to be honest, something that most people, particularly as we age, lose. Most people end up very rigid and very set in their ways and really locked into, whether they realize it or not, a very dogmatic type of thinking, which leads to a lifestyle that for most people isn't actually what they want. So because people are so imbued with these ideas and these stories that they tell themselves, and that you know, you mentioned TV and radio and things that you've read in the past all having an influence on you, you know, both negative and positive. But for most people, where they are taking in information from all of those forums and being influenced by that information, and then their field being informed by that information and their beliefs being driven by it, they end up living a life that perhaps isn't only not necessarily what they want, but by most people's standards, including their own in many cases, wouldn't be considered vital. So I just want to say that that is something that I admire in you, is that you've maintained, and I think you actually over time have expanded your ability to have this openness to new things. And that, in my opinion, is part of why you are living such a vital, beautiful life. And for me personally, I've spent most of my life in science and in, for a long period of time, academia. And now, you know, in the later part of my career, clinical science. And all of those aspects and areas of my life were very dedicated to research and looking at things as, quote unquote, scientifically as possible. And in science, we really value the N equals factor, which means it's your sample size, essentially. So when you publish a study, you want your sample size generally to be as large as possible to show that whatever study you're conducting, whatever experiment you've done, has been tested against a large number of people and therefore would be more relevant for the general population or for anyone who decides to pick up the study and take its information into consideration. And for me now, where I'm at in this part of my life, my N number is N equals one, meaning N equals you, the unique version of you that has been put here on earth to do something inspired and amazing and to really call in your highest, truest version of yourself into your physical form and, as the show says, become superhuman. And I think that that is possible for each and every one of us if we allow it. And first of all, if we even recognize that it's possible. And I think that you are living proof of that. You're a very much embodied N equals one. You take things and you try them and you assess them and you modify them and you really just live into the idea that you are here to be in a physical form, be in a physical body, but live into that at the highest version of the highest self that you can be. And so I would just like to say thank you for being a really beautiful example of that in my life and a beautiful example for anyone who may be listening to this and who gets to interact with you, you know, in a greater capacity in your larger field.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So what are some key things that you have implemented in the last, let's say, 10 years. So I know that you have sort of over time transitioned from a place where you were maybe a little bit more involved with mainstream forms of, you know, food, medicine, health in general, education, these types of systems that still currently exist, but may not really lead to the most embodied, most developed forms of ourselves. And you're now living a life where you mentioned this early on in our conversation that you believe self-responsibility, so not outsourcing a lot of these parts of our existence, is important to you. So in becoming self-responsible, what has that looked like? How have things shifted for you over the last, let's say, decade from where you were versus how you operate now?
So in the last 10 years, I would say probably more like the last 20 years. And usually when I say 10 years, I mean 20 anyway, because I forget that it's been 20. It would be what we talked about earlier when we talked about the fact, learning that we are these energetic beings, as an example, and just examining within myself, as you said, just checking with myself, doing experimenting on myself. So in my mind, I'm less scientific as you, which we both know. And I believe that I'm both the scientist and the experiment. And so having that in mind, things that I've done, I probably always will and am still constantly seeking out information. I love information. I love to learn. I would say of anything in this incarnation that I'm in right now is I'm an avid learner, and it's probably my greatest strength. And it's probably, I'm very curious. I ask a ton of questions, and I'm just very curious. And I think that's a good thing to be. And so I've explored many different types of eating, as an example. And I think all along the way, maybe what I did at that time was the best thing for that time, which is kind of another thing that I think as well, wherever you're at right now is exactly where you're meant to be in the moment. Not to say that you don't need to make changes, because often we do. But so I went from, I've always sort of eaten vegetables. So I went for thinking, okay, what do I know for sure about the body and what the body needs? And then again, I always look at my dad and his family, because they lived to be so old and so healthy. So I'm like, okay, let's at least look at that, because that's a good place to, you know, to start from. And then I have tried. So my food, I'm very particular about food, very particular. And now I'm to the point of when you talked about Sheldon, he talks about a transitional diet. He talks about raw foods. And so what I'm noticing now is with the right amount of water as well as raw foods, I'm actually can see that I'm even my skin tones are nicer. It's kind of like I'm anti-aging a little bit, and I'm in the beginning phases of being fully raw, and I'm in the transitional phases, but I'm pretty close. I would say probably 90% there. And for myself, over the last 10 years, these are the things that I've explored. I've explored different information that came to me at the time, tried it and said, okay, how does that work? I can do, notice, am I sleeping? Am I vibrant? How do I feel? My children, my grown daughters will tell you, likely on the whole, I have more energy than they do. They're amazing. So it's not that. And they hold me very accountable, which is amazing too. It doesn't always feel amazing in the moment, but it is really good that I have that. And so what I eat, I typically exercise, I typically do yoga. And in the last 10 years, I feel that since I've gotten into my 50s, 60s, it's really important that I stay the course. Like in my 30s and 40s, even in my early 50s, I could, you know, run one summer, not run in the winter, go run again in the summer, or do yoga and, you know, not do it for 5 months and then do it again. And what I feel I'm noticing now that is important is that I stay on track with the things that I start. So if that makes sense, I feel like if there's any part of aging that I'm noticing, that's what I notice. But it's still, even having said that, I would, if, you know, as I've said to you before, Nirvani, that if I could tell a younger woman right now, what is one of the most important things you could do? First of all, it's to love yourself. Just deeply, deeply, deeply love yourself, accept yourself. And the next thing is do yoga. Do yoga and watch what food you put into your body. So that's what I do myself. And I am likely as healthy, if not healthier now, than I was in my 40s. And I've been very fortunate because as you say, I've always experimented, and I've always, to a degree, to a fairly good degree, taken responsibility for my own health. I grew up with my dad was quite old when he had the four youngest children, myself and my younger siblings, and I come from a family of 12. So the four younger ones, dad was quite older by the time we were born, and he was very holistic. And so I had that right out of the gate, which was lovely. And so I've sort of stayed with that my whole life of being somewhat responsible for my health. And the only time that I didn't was the time that I was ever the sickest. Like when I handed over my health to the healthcare system is the time that I was the most sick. And then when I realized that and just sort of took responsibility again for my own well-being, for how I think, for my feelings, for what I'm putting into my body, what information I'm taking in, got myself back on track, and I feel amazing.
Well, thank you. You mentioned just now, which, yes, you have mentioned to me before, for women, loving yourself, one, and two, doing yoga. You and I have also had many conversations over the years because you're in a different stage of your life as far as work and your ability to reflect back on your life's career in work and how you approached work and how you let that influence you. Now, where I am at, I am really starting to lean into the idea of embodying my feminine energy and just allowing women to know that there is a potency and agency in that feminine power that I believe most of us have just not unlocked and most women don't even know about. And one of the simplest ways I've been able to connect to this part of myself is cycle thinking. And I've only been doing this now, it's been a couple of months. So I am noticing things that I didn't notice before in my cycle. And I won't necessarily go into all of the details of that here in this conversation, but I will say that honoring our feminine energy and honoring the cycle that we are biologically wired to operate within, which is not a 9-to-5 grind, 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 reset every 24-hour cycle. Our feminine cycles last anywhere from 28 to 34 days. And that's based on hormonal fluctuations and hormonal baseline replenishment. And those things are very different in a woman versus a man, where they are primarily driven by testosterone, which does replenish every 24 mm-hmm. hours or so in the male body. So having said all of that, there are some people that don't necessarily fall into this category, but most of us, women included, we have been programmed and we have designed these lives where we exist in systems that require us to almost function robotically, like get up, get your family ready, get everybody out the door, or get them to school or to daycare, get to work, work all day long, get home, get dinner ready, get things cleaned up, get the kids ready for bed, you know, crash into bed at night and do that all over again, over and over and over again for years. And that 9-to-5 repetitive workflow where you just basically push and push and push goes completely against how we are wired, where we are hormonally constantly changing. Our level of not only energy, but our level of awareness and ability to create in a really beautiful, loving way is concentrated within our cycle, but doesn't spread out equally over that 28 to 34 day period. So there are times that are better designed that we are better suited to actually focus on work and focus on creation and women in general, we are able to create life and grow life and birth life into this world. So we have this incredibly potent creational life force energetic capability that we can use when we're not creating life, when we're not giving birth to a child necessarily, but we can use towards creativity of other things. And in your life, now that you can look back over your approach to work and the ideas that have been built into all of us around work and working hard and feeling value and validated through what we contribute in our work, what would you say to women? What advice would you give any woman listening to this about approaching work and how to build a life that has work in it, but really leverages our feminine power versus trying to push and push and push ourselves into a world that was not designed for us? And if you continue to do it, will actually drain you. It will suck the life force energy from you.
Thank you. We've talked about this in the past, and I remember at one point where you were working and still do very hard. And I remember you telling me that you were tired and us having discussions around that. And so I go back because I would have entered the workforce in the late 70s, early 80s. And that's when big change was happening. So basically, I was married, I had young children, and there was a lot of, again, I call it the social engineering. There was a lot of, whether it be media, whether it be people that, like when you were out and about, say, for an example, if I went to a gathering and you're meeting people, and, oh, what do you do? Because that just seemed to be what everybody says, and they still kind of do. But back then, you know, oh, well, I'm a mom, I have children, and it felt as though that wasn't important. And I think that was the beginning of what you just spoke of. That was the beginning of not staying home and taking care of our children, doing the things, and not that women have to just stay home and take care of the children. I mean, that's an extremely beautiful thing to do, but I'm not saying it from that perspective. But at this point, I would say not many women can even do that anymore because of the lifestyles that we've developed. But I was part of that process where we believed that we had to get out into the workforce. And so I did that. I re-educated myself. I went to college. I got divorced. I raised my two children myself. I did have, you know, some help from my ex-husband, but I was the main provider. And I did exactly what you said. I worked so hard. It would be nothing to get up at 5:30 in the morning, work all day, cook meals, take my children to sports, drop into bed and start that all over again. And very robotic, exhausted, no time for yourself, no energy for things that you might want to do outside of that routine, because that was in my day as a younger woman. The husband went to work and he came home and he cut the lawn and he, you know, shoveled when it snowed and things like that. And I cooked the meals. I did the grocery shopping. I looked after the children. I cleaned the house. I paid the bills. And I remember my ex-husband saying to me one time, oh, I made the bed today. And I said, yes, well, I made it the other 364 days this year. And then we had this conversation about, you know, how it didn't feel fair because I felt like I was doing more. And he said, well, I cut the lawn and I, you know, shovel. So I said, okay, from now on, I'm going to cook when you shovel and cut the lawn. Anyway, I was a feisty little thing. And needless to say, I've been divorced twice. At any rate, but that thing that you're speaking of, I did not get to honor my feminine side. And I was just so busy. And I had my first children very young. So I was a mom really, really young. And then in my late 30s, I had another child. So basically, I did that same thing of working really hard and raising a child and doing the cooking, cleaning, mothering, and all of that up into my late 40s, early 50s. And then by that time, my two older children were fully grown and had children of their own. And my younger one was, you know, an older teenager. So I started to be able to go, whoa, okay, I can breathe now. I can, you know, read a book from beginning to end. I can take a course. I can take yoga. I can just do things that I hadn't had time to do before. And of course, now into my 60s, I have beautiful amounts of time to do the things that my soul is calling to. And when I look at that, I would advise young women and yourself and my daughters and any young woman who's listening to really go inside and decide what is the most important to you. What makes your heart sing? What makes you get out of bed in the morning? If that's not what you're doing, make some changes. Make some changes. Because I feel like what we're talking about, longevity and vibrancy, that just sucks the life right out of you. And I know that, you know, sometimes we do have to go to jobs until we can transition into something differently. But honestly, I think what the world needs right now are people who love their lives, who love themselves, who love what they're doing, who just feel valuable for existing and being good people and being loving people, as opposed to have a title or having, you know, we can see it. There's nothing wrong with having. I want to clear that. I don't want to imagine that you can't have a beautiful home or a vehicle or a job if that's what you want. But they're just, I feel that we created a world, especially for women, but for everybody as well, a world where we no longer even have the option, like I did when I was really young, to just stay home if we wanted to and look after our children, because the cost of living is high. But I also believe that if you go to your heart and you do what makes your heart sing, somehow that'll work out to help you, you know, financially, if that's what you need. And for yourself and again, my daughters and anybody who's listening, this thing that we've created where we get up at 5:30, and I know women, even a lot of young women who are doing this, you know, you get up and you get your children ready and you go to work and you work all day and you come home and lucky if you get to cook a good dinner and then off to sports with the kids and get your kids in bed at 9 o'clock at night and you have a half an hour before you, you know, you're dying ready for the next day. So in my experience as a woman in her 60s, I would tell you not to do that. I would tell you to find something that really makes your heart sing, to partner up with a person who's in alignment with that. Have your children once you've done all that. And again, children need their parents. And I was so busy when I was young, and I can see, you know, the things looking back that that my children missed because I was so busy, and I did the very best, and I forgive myself for anything that I did that wasn't in their highest interest in my busyness of just working and trying to take care of the finances and things like that. And my children are amazing, and I feel so lucky that I, at some point, was given the opportunities that I've been given. And I, you know, as the door opened, I had the courage to step through and create differently. And I believe that everything that we're talking about, it just is full circle here, you know, from the fact that I love to meditate and I can just go inside and I can feel the presence of this divine energy, whatever it is we want to call it. I can feel gratitude and I can feel deep love that I have the ability, whether it's my own garden or whatever, to put food into my body that is honoring this body that I'm in right now. And then, you know, to have beautiful young friends like yourself and Kevin and my daughters. And I'm like kind of the luckiest person ever. I'm out and about with you guys, and I almost, excepting when I look in the mirror, I think I'm exactly the same. I hardly even notice that, you know, I'm 30 years older than everybody else. I just kind of go with the flow, and you know, it's amazing. And I feel extremely privileged as well to be at this season and just to be able to look around and look back and, you know, have conversations with younger people and to say, oh my goodness, no, that's baloney. You know, don't subscribe to that. Go inside, go to your heart and follow your heart. Your heart will never, ever lead you astray.
And when you're working with people, I know primarily, I believe most of your clients tend to be women, but when you're working with your clients and you are in that coaching setting and trying to help them shift as far as how they see the world, the ideas that they're using to approach their own life and approach the world around them, and, you know, perhaps in some cases their families or their businesses, what are some ways that you get them to shift their perspective? So, you know, practically, what does it look like to shift out of a victim mentality, as you mentioned earlier, and shift into a place of being more self-responsible, more self-sovereign, and really empowering yourself?
I believe that if we go back to the foundation, when we all realize that we're all made of this energy again, so basically I start with a foundation, and we go into, there are seven laws of existence that I subscribe to. And I always start with anybody who comes into my coaching sessions with those seven laws, because once you understand that at whatever level you do, you begin to realize that it all comes from you. You are energy itself. Everything is happening now. There is no past. There is no future. It's all right now. And when you start to see those things, I feel like it takes away some fear, because a lot of people will have, they'll have regrets from the past, and they will have fear for the future. And so then your attention isn't in the now, which is the only time that we ever actually experience. So these are the types of conversations that I have with people. And we usually will take, out of those seven laws, we'll take one at a time, we'll talk about it, and then we'll relate it to what is happening in that person's life right now. And I feel, and I found that, again, we are, in my experience and in my understanding, we are divine, or we are souls, and we have a soul journey, so to speak. And so if you've come to me, if you want to coach with me, then likely you resonate with the things that I talk to you about, such as the fact that we're made of energy, and bringing that foundation into daily life so that we realize, I believe that in itself, once you start to look inside, when you are able to even, because I've had people say to me things like, oh, I can't meditate. I could never quiet my mind, you know. And I always laugh, because I think it's, I don't know, truly the Buddha said it, but it's a Buddha thing that people say, oh, for you who cannot meditate for a half an hour, you in particular need an hour. Anyway, so so we just sort of talk about things like that. And what I've found is most people who come to me are not feeling good. They're not feeling good. And with starting with those seven laws, and with lots of gentleness and listening and having them sort of explore themselves in my presence, I feel that people begin to understand that they have more say. I feel like some of what we're experiencing on earth is thinking that the doctor's going to take care of our health. You know, the accountant's going to take care of our money. The grocery market's going to take care of our food. The school's going to take care of our kids, you know, like all of these things, right? So when you start to realize, okay, yes, that is all happening, but I also have a say in all of that. And it's really important. My part in it is really important. And I believe that I live that as well. So I'm a living example of that as well for the people that come to see me. So I hope I've answered that question.
Yeah, you have. And I would agree, you are a living example of all of those things. And I think the point of being self-responsible is incredibly important, because we have outsourced the responsibility of so many things in our life, basically everything. Now you don't even have to leave the house really, if you don't want to. Many people work from home, they work remotely. You could have your groceries delivered directly to your front door. You could have your toilet paper, your Kleenex, anything else you might need delivered directly to your front door. And then even on a larger scale, as you said, you know, many people think that the medical system is responsible for their health, or the educational system is responsible for their or their children's education and the development of their knowledge, and on and on and on. And so I think that when you really start to look at all of these aspects of life where there's a lot of convenience and there is the ability to kind of passively exist within these systems and think that you're getting some kind of return from them, but you have to really look at what is the cost of engaging with them. And is that cost greater than just investing some of that energy into yourself and developing some practices and paradigm shifts and mindset developments that maybe are more favorable for you and your family, if that's relevant for you? And that is what I hope people start taking away from conversations like this, or, you know, even just realizing on their own that there are many systems that are sort of enveloping our existence right now. But really, when you step even slightly outside of them, and that's usually one step towards a much more expansive, beautiful, rewarding life in so many ways, because we have been trained to not take responsibility for things and to listen to the experts and to assume that somebody knows better than us. And when we start operating from a place of connecting to our intuition and connecting to the universal knowledge that is just innately available to us if we are open to it, I think that is where, you know, as we've said many times before, I've taken these words from Charles Eisenstein, that's where we can start creating a more beautiful world that we know is possible. So I just want to thank you for this conversation today, and thank you for sharing some of your wisdom with us about what it means to be on this earth, age, do it gracefully, but really just be a beautiful example of vibrance and vitality and living a life that is admirable and is inspirational. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Nirvan.
And
my pleasure.
And we will share in the show notes your website, and that way anyone who would like to get in touch with you and learn a little bit more about what you do will have access to that.
Thank you.